7 of the NLSC podcast. I'm going to do something a little different this week and dedicate this week's episode to Kevin Smith. And if you've seen any of Kevin Smith's movies, particularly Clerks, you know exactly what I mean by that reference. I'm Andrew, the guy who runs this dog and pony show. I'm joined by Ben, the guy whose team's been winning lately. Yeah.
Are we talking baseball?
We're talking all forms of sports.
Pretty
much. Because I for one, am thankful that, you know, the NBA has stopped, and thus the Heat have stopped winning for a while. And the Pistons have stopped losing for a while. They've actually gone unbeaten since the playoffs started, which is nice.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at some league stats.
But he wasn't also...
Yeah, that too.
But we are joined by a couple of other folks this week. The guy you like to pester for modding, Jasmine.
Okay, just one thing. If you're going to pester me for stuff, own the freaking game. If you pirate it, I'm not helping you. It amazes me how much effort I put into one person. We're talking like at least a dozen PMs or emails or whatever, back and forth, back and forth. Is it because I downloaded the game? Yep. Well, I'm glad I helped you.
Yeah. And the guy that, finally, the guy that really doesn't want you to pirate the game, since he'll be working on it. We welcome back, only to farewell, Leftos.
Hello. Yeah, I'm going to be put on the grave, and unlike Ben, I'm not going to come back next week. Or am I? No, I'm not. But, yeah.
We got work.
Listen until you've got something really, you know, a bombshell, a pipe bomb to drop with information that's been readily approved.
At some point, I wish, but not yet, unfortunately. This is going to be a spoiler-free episode, so if you were hoping that you were going to hear the biggest news about the NBA 2K14 that you haven't heard yet, then maybe you should stop listening, or should you?
What? Leftos is on the cover.
Yeah, it's going to be the special Greek cover. I'm going to be on it.
It's like the European versions of NBA Live with Tony Parker.
I didn't know they had separate covers.
Yeah. A couple of years, yeah. They even had Yuta Tabuse on the Japanese cover once. I'm not sure how well it sold, but
yeah,
it just would have been bought by his family members.
Yeah.
And his friends, if they recognized him.
I don't see Amanda Bynes on the docket today, and I was really hoping we would go through that subject, because I'm really worried about her.
Huh?
Well, I guess we could get there if we have time at the end, but...
If the episode ends up being less than an hour and 30 minutes, then we're going to talk about Amanda Bynes. So
do we really need to talk about another train wreck? Isn't the world depressing enough as is?
Let's just wait and see how this Lakers season goes.
Well, now that we've put that thread out there.
Yeah. Speaking of train wrecks.
What?
The Lakers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Good segue.
So glad you guys aren't talking about the Celtics.
That's more of a cataclysm than a absolutely. There's no arc big enough to fill the Celtics fans that are going to be very, 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 very disappointed this season.
You know, it's funny that I've been reading on the Reddit some stuff about how the Celtics, you know, really came out really good in all of it because they got some kind of like $10 million trade exception, and pretty much they're going to be major players in the 2014 free agency with LeBron, and it's kind of like, yeah, you're missing the point. But it would be funny if LeBron went to one team and the Melo went to the other team with the Lakers and the Celtics. That would be that would be interesting, but it's not gonna happen.
Do you guys give any validity to the rumors about the Lakers wanting LeBron and Anthony.
Do they want them? Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. But
are they going to get them? No.
No. Maybe Melo. Maybe Melo, just because New York is obviously working out so very well. But it's just, I mean, poor Knicks. They finally get good. They finally get some good players, and then Brooklyn. Here's the best players from the Celtics. Good luck.
Nets to me seem like Real Madrid, who for a lot of years has been one of the biggest spending teams in the world as far as soccer, or in my parts of the world, football goes, but never got around to building the super team that it hoped it would. Other teams that didn't have as much talent were most of the time trying to find a way, were managing to find a way to do better than Real Madrid was doing. And it seems like it doesn't just take to throw all your money at players and get them to be in the same team. I guess that's out of the window. So I don't know if, you know, even a combo of LeBron and Anthony, who I suppose aren't they, you know, I wouldn't say they're similar in their playing styles, but aren't they supposed to be affecting the same parts of the floor? Do you see that combo even working?
Well, no, but I mean, I appreciate you addressing me as an equal to you three by saying soccer over football, just for me. But it's weird because, I mean, you had that story come out about Andrei Kirilenko taking $3 million instead of $10 million. And, you know, the talk of the owner giving him extra money on the side and all this stuff. So, I mean, I know enough about soccer to know about Real Madrid and understand what the hell what you're saying. But it's just, it's shady, I guess is the best way to put it.
Didn't the Timberwolves lose picks over when they signed Josh Smith to to that agreement back in 2000? I mean, the salary cap restrictions are in place to stop this. You know, how is this legal? You know, great point.
But to get back to Melo and LeBron, sorry. It's just a quick thing I wanted to mention. But with Melo and LeBron, I mean, they're supposed to be the same position, but they played very differently. I mean, LeBron's best at either spotting up and being insane or just driving to the rim, and Melo is more of the mid-range guy, I see him as, at least, or a scorer. So I could see it work.
You give it a go. Nothing else. I mean, to get two players of that caliber on the team.
To ramble and completely screw it up even more. Something that we did on my college basketball team the second year, we technically, we were so deep, I guess the best way to put it. And of course, I was the 11th man out. But the way our coach had the games or our lineup set up was that he actually had two teams. And essentially, he would bring in a second set of starters that played a completely different offensive set, a completely different defensive set, and would essentially run two teams on the same team. So he had five players for one team, five players for another team, and then me and another kid would be the subs for those two teams as needed. And so I almost wonder if that would work with LeBron and Melo, if you know, get one of them to come off the bench and set up a second starting five, maybe? I don't know.
It's essentially like an NFL team where they have an offensive and a defensive team.
Right.
But do you see any of these two accepting to come off the bench?
No.
it's going to be Melo.
It's
not LeBron going to be coming off the bench, I can tell you that.
Is it weird that I want them to stay in separate teams just because I want to see they're both big enough and, you know, not big, but, you know, talented enough that I want to see, you know, teams building around them both. With each one being in a different team. I don't want them both to be on the same team because that leaves, you know, one less superstar to be the core of another team, so we have less teams that are of that caliber, and it just seems unfair to have LeBron and Anthony on the same team.
Well, that's the knock. You know, that's the knock on the Heat's big three as it is. People weren't happy, well, for many reasons they weren't happy that they came together the way they did, but it brought three stars, or two and a half stars, if we want to take another shot at Bosch.
Mike Miller is a big star, Andrew. I can't see how you say that Wade, James, and Miller aren't the big three.
Joel Anthony, but
the greatness that is.
Yeah. Respect. But that is the reason that people, one of the reasons they dislike the way it came together. So again, yeah, people want to see the stars on different teams. The thing they threw out there, of course, would you want to see Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird on the same team? It would be kind of cool. I think that team might go 82-0. But you lose that competitive edge. You lose that franchise player in each city. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think people would be disappointed to see it again. Yeah.
The competitiveness that you just said is exactly what develops players and turns them into stars. The Warriors would not be where they are right now if Iggy signed with them instead of if Iggy went to them instead of Denver a couple of years ago. The Pacers wouldn't be anywhere like this if Granger's continued to be a star and then maybe they got a couple other stars in there. At the same time, the counter to that is Rondo never would have gotten as good as he did if it weren't for Pierce, Ray, and KG coming together with him. So, yeah. I mean, I see both sides of that argument, and it's just, I like it more, I like this combination that we have, where you have teams like the Bucks experimenting with Ellis and Jennings and trying different things to try and compete with these teams and failing miserably. But, I mean, the Pelicans might turn out good with the people they're bringing in, and not good this year, but maybe good next year.
The Bulls. The Bulls have signed Mike Dunleavy Jr., so it's all
over. The Bulls are going to get a healthy Derrick Rose. Hopefully. Maybe for you.
Maybe, yeah.
He said he's 100%.
What's this that Ben said he's going to... Has he declared he's going to return for the Bulls preseason opener? That's a thing, yep. Is it?
Yeah, that's okay. A thing.
I missed that one today because my internet's been shoddy. But fantastic. hashtag the return. I mean, I just want to see it. You know,
I'm with you on that. I've missed watching Derrick Rose play. To be honest, he's been away for so long, and you know, making fun at him is easy. But the league is missing one of the most exciting and talented players. And that's, you know, that I think that's the end of the story when you sit down and really think about it seriously. Yeah. And not just trying to jab at, you know, the fact that he's been away for so long. We've been saying that for...
As one of our forum members has said, apparently he's mentally broken. So...
What?
Yeah, one of our members in our... NBA basketball talk section has claimed that he's mentally broken and will never be the same player.
Was that run by some website, or is that just their personal opinion?
That's somebody playing armchair psychologist. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I just want to acknowledge that just to make fun of it, really.
Yeah. Let's just skip by that, and before I ask John how he feels about the way the Celtics are turning out and the trade that happened, because he hasn't been on the podcast like I haven't been the past few weeks, I wanted to bring up something. Does the salary tax really make any difference considering the people that own the teams? I mean, when you consider... When you consider teams like the Brooklyn Nets and in soccer, when you consider Chelsea, who has been, you know, who the... If you're familiar with the game Football Manager, there's a specific, not exactly cheat code, there's a setting in the database that specific teams can have sugar daddies. People that will just keep spending money on the teams like there's no tomorrow. And that essentially, it's a cheat code, but a realistic one, as in you don't have to actually cheat because the team, the developers of Football Manager use it on Chelsea. Chelsea is the only team in the huge database of Football Manager that has that setting turned on by default, because Roman Abramovich, who's running the team, just seems to have an infinite source of money. It's like he's printing money just to spend it on Chelsea, and it seems to be going the same way with Brooklyn. So I'm thinking, is it time we had a lower hard cap instead of imposing salary tax that some owners, it's not going to make any difference to them because they have that much money.
Would you ever get it through? Would they ever agree to that in the CBA?
I don't know.
I remember reading something recently that there is no hard cap in the NBA. It's just more fines. There's a hard cap in 2K that you cannot go over. but in the real NBA, there's no hard cap. It's just you pay an insane amount of luxury taxes.
Oh, and okay. There are restrictions on whether how much you can offer with the mid-level exception, yeah. And whether you can do sign-and-trades. I think anyone in tax territory can't actually do sign-and-trades. So there are restrictions like that now that make it a little bit harder than before, but even so.
But still, you know, if you can spend any amount of money you want because there's no hard cap.
Yeah, there's no hard cap.
And if you're rich enough, you can just spend as much money if you want, but you can't do sign and trades. You know,
you can't do sign and trades, but you can also, there's still the restrictions on being able to offer money to specific players. I mean, there's a reason why they had to finagle LeBron, Bosh, and Wade as they came in taking less salaries. There's a reason why, you know, next year when Melo and LeBron, if they go to the same team along with it, you know, they can't just go to the Brooklyn Nets because they have all their salary tied up. There's a reason why the Lakers are, you know, clearing out their books for next year so they can offer Melo and LeBron max contracts at the same time along with Kobe. So,
and it doesn't always work. I mean, you look at how high the Nets payroll was this year just to go out in the first round to the ghost of the Chicago Bulls.
I agree with you. That was the point I was making about Real Madrid previously, is that they are a team that seem to be getting the best players in the world. Every single year, you would hear how they signed another and another and another great soccer player, but it never seemed to work out because a team isn't just a sum of its parts, and it turns out to be the same way in soccer as it is in basketball and, you know, vice versa. So I'm just saying that do we let the Brooklyn Nets spend as much money and the owner of the Brooklyn Nets spend as much money as they want while the Brooklyn Nets are failing? What happens when they stop failing? What happens if, you know, rich teams can just, you know, grab all the right players and because they can go as much above the soft cap as they want? I mean, I hear about the restrictions Zone has mentioned and I wasn't familiar with all of them, to be honest. But I'm just saying, do you feel that stuff was enough? Do you feel that this stuff is enough? Or do you think that we need to have additional rules imposed?
Well, if I remember correctly, again, this is all off the top of my head, and this is stuff that I've never learned about until I started going on Reddit, was, you know, when the teams play these luxury taxes and everything above the soft cap and all that stuff, that money gets distributed between the other owners of the NBA, so technically they could start affording to do crazier things if one team is just going nuts with this. I mean, I don't know exactly how it all works, and I'm probably just talking straight out my rear end here, but I don't think that it needs a change because, if I remember correctly, the NBA is one of the more restrictive when it comes to the soft cap like that, because you have the MLB where they can just do whatever the heck they want. I think it's the same with soccer. And then the NFL is completely, like, locked down. And so,
yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And I seriously wouldn't want to see another lockout, you know, be that long and have us lose half of a season or see another 66 games, so, you know, so ridiculously packed season because the owners can't agree with the players and the NBA about all the restrictions in place. So, yeah, and I guess it works out. If at some point, and the NBA special as in the fact that it's one of the few leagues around the world that has the draft set up so that the worst teams get, you know, the best players of the draft get the first picks, at least, not the best players, because we've seen teams pick players that don't turn out like they want them, as in Darko, for example. But, you know...
Oh, wash your mouth out with soap. The great Darko Milicic.
Yeah. I'm sorry. That was a bad example. But you know what I mean. I mean, you know. But still, you know, it's interesting. And I like how the draft is set up. I always speak highly of that. I was just wondering, you know, where does this thing with the Brooklyn Nets at least end? And as long as the Nets just keep failing with all the money they're spending on salaries, I'm still going to get that nice feeling of Schadenfreude over that a person is spending so much money on people and the team just isn't working out. But
it makes you feel better about Charlie Villanueva's contract.
that and the Pistons aren't going to amnesty him for whatever reason. And in any case, yeah, you made an interesting comment, Andrew. I think it was the last podcast where you said that someone is getting just 4 million, and it suddenly hit you that we're talking about just 4 million.
Yeah.
It's still, you know, ridiculous as far as the salary goes. I mean, my salary is going to be close to that, but...
Well, as the cover player,
Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly 4 million, but it's very close.
After
give or take
taxes, you know.
Yeah, give or take $3,900,000. I mean, that about that, you know. But it's close in the general aspect of things, or, you know, when you compare it to a billion.
I can't believe they're paying you $7 million.
Yeah. It's now out. I get $7 million after taxes, just by being a software engineer.
I can't believe they're paying you $7 million just to work on the shoes. It just.
I said this is going to be spoiler free, and you're already revealing things that shouldn't be revealed. No. Let's put this disclaimer out there that none of this is even remotely true, other than the fact that I am actually going to start working as a software engineer at OK.
Leftos is on the cover in Greece.
Yeah.
And blacktop mode is the main mode, and the only mode of the entire game.
If it takes me buying all the copies of NBA 2K14, getting them home, replacing the cover, and putting them back in the stores, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go through that.
Money well spent. You know.
Yeah. I'm going to be here September 30th, going to every single store and replacing the cover myself.
You know, they called America the land of opportunity. The opportunity to waste all of your salary on such a stupid venture is to buy all the copies of a video game and replace the cover to resell them at a fraction of the price.
It's going to be a hard sell when I go to the bank to get a loan for this, but, you know, it's probably worth the trouble, I guess.
I'm sure our bank will support the cause for pure egotism.
Yeah, we've heard banks give loans out for more ridiculous reasons, right?
Yeah.
The whole banking system hasn't collapsed because it gave only sensible loans to people that it made sense to give loans. So, yeah, to throw that comment in as well. What is this podcast about again? I think it's about basketball and Amada Bynes and NBA games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yes, I wanted to ask John, and you guys can also give your opinion as well on the subject.
Do this.
How do you feel...
Oh.
Yeah, you have to. You haven't been on the podcast. We haven't done a Let's Play in some time, so I can pester you while you know, running into you in grid.
Let's go race cars.
How did you feel about the big trade the Celtics did, and the fact that Pierce and Garnett aren't going to be ending their careers with the Celtics?
Oh, so you want to play Legos in Minecraft? Okay, I'll load it up. Oh my god. You know, I have been avoiding it because I don't want to talk about it. It hasn't hit me yet.
Okay, then. Ben, The Last of Us.
No.
I can kill about 3 hours on that if you like.
I know. Everybody knows by now.
I know.
The Celtics, I mean, it only sunk in. It only hit me when I saw a picture on Reddit of Brooklyn Nets jerseys for those two players. And I mean, it's been confirmed that Garnett's going to go back to wearing 21 instead of 5. He's going to wear number 2 for his for his friend that died. Sorry. And Pierce is going to keep 34 and all that. That is when it started to hit me. And then, because I mean, when I played some games in 2K right after the trade happened. And I played another game too that I uploaded to my channel and all that fun. And Pierce wasn't on the team, and that doesn't bother me because, I mean, he's been injured before. So, you know, I was used to playing with Celtics without him. But when I played a game against the new Nets was when it actually started sinking in.
Yeah.
And I'm actually okay with it. Garnett, I didn't care about because, I mean, I still see him as a Timberwolves player, even though he played on the Celtics for so long and was so great for us. I know. But Pierce being on another team hurts. But at the same time, the guy's old, and I mean, he could have very easily, you know, restructured his contract to be, you know, to take less money and stay on the team if he was that passionate about the Celtics. Because, I mean, at the same time, Pierce hasn't been producing the way he used to. And it's a two-sided street, in my opinion, when you talk about loyalty to a team. Yes, he was loyal by not demanding a trade. So, in other words, he was loyal by, you know, adhering to his contract. Okay. So, I mean, it wasn't like he's given this trade provision where he can just choose trades and demand. I mean, essentially, the choices back when the Celtics sucked were either demand a trade to, you know, not fulfill your contract or stick out the contract, and that's considered being more loyal, in my opinion. I really wish he could have stayed a Celtic throughout. I mean, I'm sure we'll see the one-day contract to retire a Celtic. Just kind of like how Scal did it, but it hurts. But looking in the future, I mean, you know, being positive about it, there is nothing that would make me happier. Nothing that would make me happier than seeing the Pistons trade Rondo for Drummond.
But never gonna happen.
But since that's not gonna happen,
Because Dumars went with Chauncey Billups,
yeah,
and we're saved. That has solved all our problems.
But I do agree that Rondo is a hothead. I do agree that Rondo has difficulties. He's going to be difficulties for Brian Shaw. He's going to be difficulties for the rebuilding Celtics. Even though he's got leadership qualities, he's, you know, if you've ever seen the behind the scenes stuff with him, he's an introvert. He is a hot-headed introvert, I guess the best way to put it. He plays Connect Four. He gets angry. He stays in himself. He's not a good leader or teammate. And he got away with it with Pierce, Ray, and KG. I mean, I'm not taking away from him on the court, but there's that chemistry you got to have that you see with the Pacers, that you see with the Warriors, where, you know, the team itself is very together, and that's what you saw with the 08 Celtics, and that's what got broken in the 09 Celtics when they got rid of Perkins. And because Perkins and Rondo, you know, Perkins kind of kept Rondo in check. And I'm not blaming Rondo for the, you know, the difficulties we've had the past couple of years, but it didn't help. So in a rebuild, in the very fragile rebuilding process, I don't see Rondo being the great person. He's got to either change and, you know, become a better leader, or he needs to just be traded while he's still worth something. I would accept and agree to a trade of Rondo for even DeMarcus Cousins, which I know you're going from one quote unquote cancer for another. But Cousins wants to be the leader of the team, and he's going to get a chance now with the Kings because Tyreek's gone. But he's a talented player, and he could do good on the Celtics, I think. To wrap it up and give a big scope on it, I think the Celtics are going to be okay. I think that they're going to pull off a Pacers kind of deal. A Pacers in Oklahoma kind of deal where they kind of build themselves up slowly, and then we'll see. We'll hear good things about the Celtics in a couple of years, but, you know, just to relate it, in my blowing up the Celtics video, someone pointed out that 2K13 actually predicted Dwight Howard going to the Rockets this year and then winning the championship. So, since I used to be a Rockets fan from Yao Ming, I am looking very forward to watching the Rockets this year and next year. It's not a bandwagon thing, damn it. It's because of Yao. And I'm going to be paying more attention to the Rockets than I am the Celtics this year, next year, and probably the year after. And when they get their stuff together, with or without Wiggins, and whatever they manage to overpay for this coming free agency for probably... I forget who the free agents are coming up this year other than LeBron and Melo. But, I mean, it's going to be a rough couple years. It's depressing. But I became a fan of the Celtics in the year 2000, 2001. So I was a fan of the Celtics throughout all of that. I'm going to stay a fan of them, and you know, I'm interested in them. But you can't blame me for taking interest in my secondary team, which all of a sudden got good again. Just as the Celtics turned into nothing. But it's depressing. It's sad. But it's for the best. And they've set themselves up for greatness in the future. But it's not going to happen right now. It's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen the year after. We're talking probably the limits of association mode in 2K. By then, they'll start being good again. But thankfully, the Lakers suck too, so I don't have to feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Because that was the worst part of when I got into the league, of how the Celtics were terrible, but the Lakers were great. And I only got a year of it being flip-flopped.
Yeah, it's weird seeing, you know, these turnarounds in the league. I mean, how many years has it been since the Lakers were this bad? How many years has it been since, you know, we had teams like Boston and the Celtics and the Lakers we're going to see them fight, struggling for a playoff spot. I mean, even last year, I made the comment on how Lakers fans were screaming with joy that the team got in the playoffs. I mean, if you're a Lakers fan, you're not screaming with joy. You're silently celebrating, telling no one about it, but you can't be screaming with joy that your team has managed with, you know, a team that had Bryant and Howard, that they managed to just get in the playoffs.
Well, ask the Bucks fans how they feel.
Yeah, no. I mean, but I'm talking about some of these teams that it was an absolute given that they'd be in the playoffs and that they'd go deep in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't feel the same way about Milwaukee.
They were talking about beating the Bulls 72-10, Lakers fans, before the season, or at least some were. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm going to say it right now. Lakers fans are the absolute friggin' worst. They are the biggest cryberry, bandwagoning, terrible pieces of whatever, and they should all be Clipper fans by now, because the amount of butthurt that I saw on Twitter was amazing. And I'm not going to say which company, because we know there's two, but I had to unfollow developers on Twitter because of the amount of butthurt over the Dwight situation. It was amazing, the BS that I saw on Twitter from people who I had previously respected and just completely bad-mouthing and giving him such terrible things. And as we're finding out, you know, now that it's more of a legitimate decision for Howard, that, you know, all the Lakers had was the fact that it was the Lakers, because he's in a system that doesn't work. He's in Kobe's shadow, who's not going away for years and years and years and will never give it up. And, you know, he's being told how to win when he's already been to the finals before. How the hell, why would you want to stay there? For the challenge
of it?
Because
they're the Lakers, man. The purple and gold, man. That's what it comes down to, apparently.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything when you're going to, you know, just S on people the entire time they're there. It's just, it's silly. Yeah. And, I mean, he's going to go to Houston, where people are already welcoming him with open arms. I mean, he evidently bought that entire restaurant their dinner that night that he arrived. And, I mean, and they've been waiting for a big man. And Houston was the way to go through and through. And the amount of butthurt was just so satisfying.
And I agree with you, because, and I want to see, because Dwight Howard, I have to admit, as much as I dislike his, you know, his attitude and the way he acts and how he completely ruined the Magic association with his attitude, I have to admit that there are certain things that I see, that I saw in the whole free agency saga, that slowly lead me to think that maybe at some point he, you know, matured, he became an adult. Because I heard an interesting comment about the fact that even with all his indecision, even with everything that was said about him, the only people running rumors during his free agency, his actual free agency, and up until the point where he, you know, signed with the Rockets, were everyone but him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was silent. He was going about it privately. He wasn't making big statements. He wasn't getting on, you know, on shows, doing lengthy interviews about where he's going to go. He just put down the facts, decided where he wants to go, met with the Lakers staff to announce his decision, and then again privately, not in front of cameras or anything, and then went to Houston. And, you know, as you said, bought the whole restaurant dinner or something like that. And is now a Houston Rockets player. And that's all. And I hope it remains that way. I hope that Howard is a mature, effective, productive, good part of the Rockets. Because they have very nice pieces. The James Harden trade worked very well for them. Which, you know, I remember we were discussing, and we were so surprised by at the start of the season. I remember, I think it was one of the first episodes I did with Andrew after, you know, the season started, and how surprised we were that such an early trade had happened and that Harden was a part of the Rockets now. So I really want to see the Rockets do well, and I want to see Howard be a mature player, because he's a very talented one, but he kept pissing me off, and not just me. I don't think people at associations like the Magic will ever be able to forgive Dwight Howard as much as he matures in the future, but, you know, no time more suitable than now for him to start acting like he should. Thoughts, guys? Ben?
Like the way he did essentially dog Orlando was pretty rough. And I think thinking back to what you just said with regards to how he treated the LA situation when he left, and he wasn't the one talking, and I mean, he did the respectful thing in talking to the Lakers organization in private, and, you know, he gave him his decision, and that we gave them his decision. You know, that was respectful, so that was good on him. But I think a lot of people are still going to hate on him because of the whole initial Orlando situation and this whole sort of, I know, he'll never get that respect back from the so-called loyal hardcore fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, probably didn't add much to that conversation.
No, but, you know, you have, at some point, you know, there are things that are just obvious, that he was immature, he was a crybaby that almost ruined the whole organization, but then, you know, he seems to have matured, and it was amazing to me to see people discuss that, oh, Howard is going to meet with the Lakers, he's now considering remaining a part of the Lakers, while Howard never said anything like that.
Hey, don't you discredit multiple sources, okay?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Chris Broussard. The only people that were saying that Howard was still contemplating about, you know, remaining a part of the Lakers were reporters with sources. Howard never made any such statement, and he only went there to announce their decision to the Lakers. And when it's, you know, after people were saying that, oh, he's going to discuss with the Lakers whether he's going to be part of the team, and then, you know, it comes out that Howard went there and announced his decision, and people were saying, oh, he betrayed everyone. He told the team that he wanted to discuss, and he just went there and wasted everyone's time by saying, you know, I'm going to Houston. You know, it's the reporters are only making it worse, because they're using their sources and their own assumptions, which they turn into facts, to make Howard look worse than what he manages to make himself look like. Andrew, you know, comments?
Well, I've got to give it up for one writer, Adrian Wojnarowski, who tweeted shortly after the decision, said Howard, something along the lines of Howard's made a lot of mistakes and not handled a lot of things well, but these last few days of his free agency, he has handled well. And I'd agree. You guys have covered it fairly extensively already, but he's earned the ire of fans. He's done a lot of things to piss people off and earn criticism. And that's justified. But those last few days that he handled it, went away, made his decision, came back, handled his business, yeah, I can't fault him for that. I don't think anyone can fairly criticize him for that. I guess you can be disappointed if he's not signing with your team, and thus you make you justified in your head by saying, "Oh well, he's not worthy." It's like the old Aesop's fable about the fox and the grapes. The fox leaps and tries to get the grapes, and then wanders off and says, "Oh well, I bet they were sour anyway," and hence yeah. we get the term sour grapes. Of course, you know, there's your little history lesson, everyone out there.
I did actually not know that story, so.
No.
And that's not history.
Sorry, yeah. literary. literary. Historical, literary, whatever. But
yeah,
the point is, I think a lot of it is, the stuff that John was talking about, I do think comes down to certainly arrogance on the part of the fan base, not going to deny that, but at the same time, just plain and simple sour grapes.
Yeah. Yeah, and Howard has set himself up with all his previous actions for criticism, and nobody can deny that. But, you know, what we're all saying is that Howard has shown signs, even if the sample size is small right now, he has shown signs of maturing, which is important, because he's one of the greatest centers the league has right now, and we could use a mature Dwight Howard that just works hard, plays well for Houston and makes Houston a very exciting team.
And gets coached by Akeem Olajuwon.
yeah, that too. Which is disappointing because there were rumors that Monroe and Drummond were going to be coached by Olajuwon in the summer, but now that he's signed with Houston, there may be, you know, conflict in that, so they might not be able to train with Hakeem after all, which, you know, it's disappointing news, but then again, it's great news for the Houston organization.
And before you do before you say something about that, I will say that some of those training videos are on YouTube, and they are amazing to watch.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
But continue on, sorry.
No. I didn't have, you know, a lot to add to that. I mean, there are some Pistons news coming out these days and almost weeks that I've been away, which are, you know, if you went through them in a day and just, you know, went through all the Pistons news that have come out these 2 weeks, if I hadn't been following the Pistons, I would imagine that all my favorite Pistons blogs had turned into satiric sites, had turned into The Onion. Because Rasheed Wallace is an assistant coach. We've re-signed Chauncey Billups.
Ball don't lie.
yeah. And I'm just expecting Ben Wallace to come back from retiring and being the third Piston center. And who else is missing? And Rip Hamilton, who obviously, you know, was... Did he sign with another team or has he stayed with the Bulls? I haven't followed that.
The Bulls cut him.
The Bulls cut him?
Yeah.
Does he have a team yet?
I don't think so.
Yeah, no. So it's going to be the 2004 all over again. it's weird. I mean, I really don't get what Dumars is doing. It's dumbfounding me time and time again. First, it was the Josh Smith move, which made sense in a way that, as I said in the forums, the Pistons were doing terribly, and they have to get out of the low 30s as far as wins go, and they have to get out of the low 20s as far as the high 20s as far as attendance ranking goes. And Joe Dumars has been criticized for a lot of stuff, so maybe he's making, I don't know, serendipitous moves and safe moves. I mean, as I said, I would have rather he kept the money and spent it next offseason, even if I had to go through another year of, you know, losing and losing and losing. Because, as you guys said in the previous podcast, Joe Smith is a talented guy that just doesn't know how to utilize his talents. It's like his attributes are great, but his tendencies are all out of whack, to put it in 2K terms. So I really don't know. And the most surprising move Dumars has done, I mean, getting Rasheed Wallace as an assistant coach and getting Chauncey Billups to be the point guard were surprising you know, in themselves, and I was really disappointed to see Jose Calderon go. I was really hoping he would stay, that, you know, that Dumars would offer him a contract that would be good enough for him to resign. But the most surprising move of all was not drafting Trey Burke. Because if he wanted to make the team popular, in Michigan, at least, he would have signed Trey Burke. And he went, and he came out and said that I drafted based on need and not what the fans were hoping for. And I'm left thinking, do we really have more of a need in the wings? Or do we have more of a need at the point guard spot? Where every gamble Joe Dumars has taken as far as the draft goes in drafting guards, and he's always gone for combo guards. I mean, Rodney Stuckey, Brandon Knight, none of them has worked as a point guard. And I don't know, maybe Maurice Ziggs ends up, you know, schooling Knight into being a point guard, but then Dumars goes and signs Chauncey Billups. I really don't know what Joe Dumars is doing right now. He seems to be making some safe, serendipitous moves, but other than that, I don't feel excited at all.
Okay, well, before you keep going, what's gun to your head right now? Warriors or Pistons?
What?
Warriors or Pistons?
Warriors or Pistons?
Yeah, which one's your team?
The Warriors are much more exciting to me.
But which one's your team?
Which one's my team? Yeah. The Pistons are.
Okay, so you're not jumping ship because your Twitter was, you know.
I'm not jumping ship. I was just saying that still, since I'm going to be so close to Oakland, yeah. You know, I was thinking, is it worth it getting a season ticket? Am I going to go to enough games to watch the Warriors, which are going to be immensely exciting?
Now, do you remember what your job is to, you know, kind of sit in a hole and type and develop?
I know, but, you know, it's
you're not
it's
allowed to go see the day of light. You have a yearly development cycle to keep going on.
I know, but yeah, I'm going to go into detail about stuff like that later on. But I'm just saying, you know, I'm not jumping ship. Pistons are still my team.
Yeah.
But you can't, you know, you can't refute the fact that the Warriors were one of the most surprising teams last year. They did amazingly well with the roster they had. Stephen Curry is amazing, and then they go and add Iguodala. Stuff like that makes me wish that I hope the Pistons can make me feel so excited at some point. You know, a surprise season where I would have no hope for them to be that good, and they end up being that good, and then in the free agency season they just sign someone really great, and we end up having a very good contending team.
Well, nevertheless, I hope you enjoy your sixth seed this year.
I'm just saying I was really excited about the Warriors moves, and the Warriors are going to be very close to me, so that's why I was thinking, contemplating about the season ticket. Have you guys, you know, the rest of you been following the Pistons moves at all? Does this, you know, going back to the 2004 and grabbing pieces like Wallace as an assistant coach and Billups as the point guard and stuff like that makes sense? I mean, I got your comments on Joe Smith, but I don't think you've discussed the rest of it. Andrew?
I guess bringing back Sheed is for the fans, I guess. I mean, he's not... he's got knowledge about the game. He had a successful NBA career, so it's not unfeasible that he can't be productive in that role. So I don't mean to say it's just a token appointment, token hiring, but maybe it is to a certain extent just to get some excitement back. Like, oh, he's back in the building. How many technicals is he going to get sitting on the bench as assistant? You know, and fans can hold up signs during the game, you know, the Sheed's tech counters and whatnot. I don't know. Billups, if he's healthy and coming all the way back from his Achilles injury, then I guess he's at least a solid veteran to perhaps mentor a couple of the younger guys or be a stopgap until they can get someone better. So that's fair enough.
Yeah, but mentor who? Even Billups, I don't think, can develop Knight into a point guard.
Well, you know, maybe a couple of pointers. I guess you give it a shot, and he, if they are going to move a couple of those guys on, then
he's... Wait, Brandon... Sorry, Brandon Knight survived that? He's still alive?
Okay. Really? Really, after all this time, still?
He hasn't been on the podcast for a few weeks, so just...
Yeah, it's not been a few weeks since the DeAndre Jordan done.
Months. Months are still weeks.
I'm going to make
it takes weeks for months.
I'm going to make a connection that Ben is going to love. Pistons to me right now are like Microsoft a week after E3.
I wasn't going to be that cruel. I was just saying that Jumars is just bringing in. In like the 10-year reunion tour,
I know, but it's like Dumars saw how the picking Caldwell Pope over Burke backfired, and he realized how, you know, he wasn't going to get the seats at the Palace to get any more people than they did last year. So it feels like signing Rasheed Wallace and Chauncey Billups seem like a pure fan service moves. Seem like pure fan service moves. It doesn't... They don't make more sense to me than that. It seems like, you know, he realized he screwed the pooch by not drafting Trey Burke, which everyone in Michigan wanted, that he made sense for what the Pistons' need was, where... And so he said, okay, screw it, I'm going to bring back the 2004 team to maybe get some fans back in the Palace.
And Josh Smith.
And Joe Smith, yes. Ben?
Well, like I said, I didn't see it that way. I just saw it as a reunion tour for the Pistons. That's all I saw it as. That's all I'm going to contribute to that part of it.
Yeah, but it's not a party we're talking about. It's an NBA season.
I know.
And other than a reunion tour, which would have enjoyed, you know, if it was a one-off event somewhere and all the Pistons fans could join, or if it was, you know, a reunion at the Palace, that I could enjoy as well, but it doesn't make any sense in basketball. You know, it doesn't make any basketball sense to me.
It's Joe Dumars. It's Joe Dumars. What do you expect, man?
He had such a great run. He put together a team that was in the Eastern Finals, what, 4 or 5 years in a row? Back-to-back finals appearances, but, championship?
But he lost his way since then, you know, so... I don't know. It's like sort of the Isaiah Thomas situation all over again in my books right now.
Well, what do you know? Maybe the Pistons are the surprise of this season like the Warriors were last year. No. Nah. I can't do it. It's not going to happen. I can't
take a long hard look at yourself and think about what you just said.
No. I'm going to feel bad. I can't say such blatant lies on this podcast. No, this is going to be a disappointing year. I have no idea what other Pistons fans are feeling right now. Maybe they're confused. Maybe they're excited and disappointed at the same time. But I'm not that diehard, and I'm a young Pistons fan, so I can't get, you know, that excited over the signing of Chauncey Billups to forget that. To put aside the fact that the Pistons aren't going to be at all exciting this year.
Well, so then root for the Warriors, and I'll root for the Rockets, and we'll play 2K14 and be happy.
Yeah, I'm still going to hope and keep my fingers crossed all year that Drummond stays healthy and that Monroe does much better than he did last year, which, you know, Monroe was the most consistent piece that the Pistons had. He wasn't impressive. He didn't improve that much compared to last season, but he was the most consistent player. And I hope that now that Lawrence Frank is out and that hopefully Cheeks gives enough time to Monroe and Drummond to work together, and Monroe and Drummond are already working together a lot during the summer, I'm really hoping that this duo down at the front court is going to be all I was hoping for them to be last year, and that Drummond is going to, you know, develop to be the GOAT that I keep posting about.
I'm going to keep referencing him as the GOAT. I'm sorry. He destroyed the Summer League. He was still the youngest guy in the Orlando Summer League. And he destroyed it, and he's destroying my series. So He's the GOAT.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except for Jordan.
That's the most exciting thing about the Pistons right now. But, you know, all the other moves just confuse me. The rest of the team just makes no sense to me. And I was very excited about this offseason. I was talking about it throughout the season that this is going to be our offseason. And I'm really hoping Joe Dumars makes all the right moves. And that didn't happen. Nothing makes sense to me right now with the Pistons. So I'm just going to lay back, maybe go watch some Warriors games and see how the Pistons turn out after all.
Well, on that disenfranchised note, do we have any other NBA stuff to talk about this week?
I don't know.
We covered it all?
Ron Artest is a Nick.
Oh, yeah, is a Nick, yeah.
Yeah.
Post-tweeted where Brooklyn at, that... And
yeah.
People ask what that's about, and I said, "Well, that's Meta World Peace." That's enough said, I guess. On, I mean, he could be a solid enough signing for the Knicks if he's motivated, healthy, in shape, whatever. But
has he Hennessy taken away from the locker
at the halftime? Yeah.
Yeah.
The big moves have happened, and now we're just getting minor stuff now. Yeah.
Yeah. The biggest news of last week, as far as NBA goes, however, was Baron Davis, who apparently has been probed by aliens. I don't know if you caught that, guys, but
yeah.
I saw it there, down at the hotel that I was staying in Novato. There was this big screen that, you know, had news scrolling through it, you know, headlines and short descriptions of the articles. I was crying my eyeballs out when I saw that Baron Davis claims he's been abducted by aliens, and I was.
Is that what he's blaming the decay of his game on? Like Space Jam, the aliens have come and taken his game.
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. But you know, it gives you it gives you perspective that as if we needed more perspective on that NBA players are humans. And they can say pretty damn stupid things.
Well, just because he's a famous basketball player does not mean he's not going to get abducted. I mean, they don't discriminate, aliens.
Okay. And I have to apologize to all our alien believers out there that, you know, maybe I've offended you, maybe you've been abducted by aliens and want to share your stories with me. Feel free. Just know that I'm going to ignore you. And maybe make a mention of you on the podcast that's not going to be very, you know, complimenting.
You can tweet Leftos your stories at Arcane Apparel. So.
I have a phone number to give you.
Sorry.
And it's not going to be mine.
Sorry, I feel that you guys are ignoring my silence here.
The truth is out there. But
it's in Vermont.
Yeah. In any case, yeah. I don't think there's
isn't that
much...
a little bit too upscale for where most alien abductions occur? Isn't it more like the trailer trash sort of based areas?
Yeah, you don't really hear the stories coming out of big cities, do you? I mean, most people that you see getting reported about, you know, going on the news saying that I was abducted by aliens all seem to fit the stereotype, you know, that Hollywood has produced about the more rural areas of the U.S. To put it that way. I mean, I'm saying it's a stereotype, and it's an unfair stereotype, just to be, you know, politically correct about it, but I'm just saying... most of the people I've seen go on the news saying I was abducted by aliens seem to be from the more rural areas.
It's kind of weird that if aliens want to make their presence known, they're not landing on the lawn of the White House or in front of the Eiffel Tower, perhaps, where there's a lot of people and prominent.
Yeah, they're being discreet. I mean, or maybe they're starting from the rural areas and are going to go into the big cities gradually. You don't know. I mean, we haven't met them. We haven't asked them. And as I'm always saying, when I don't know what the truth is about something because I haven't experienced it myself, I'm going to be skeptical about it. And I'm going to say that it may just as well be so. So we may just as well have aliens, and they could be abducting people, and they could be preferring people from rural areas. But then again, what TV told me is that Emmanuel was the subject the aliens picked up to learn about how humans have sex. So TV teaches me new things every day. If more of you have stories about, you know, being abducted by aliens and stuff like that, and you're from a big city, please contact me. You're going to have my attention for at least 5 seconds. I promise you that.
So, him.
Yeah.
Do the hard stuff.
If you want to impress an NBA 2K developer with stories of aliens, you know.
Yeah, be from a big city. Be from a big city. Because if you're just going to give me another, you know, a crop circle story, or I live in a trailer and I was abducted by aliens and they probed me and they you know, and I'm back and they erased all my memories and stuff, I you're not going to get my attention. But if you're from New York or Los Angeles and, you know, you were abducted by aliens, feel free to, you know, share your story with me. So should we move on to other more important stuff than the NBA? You know,
wow, that wasn't egotistical.
I thought we had the subject of aliens, but since you brought it up so casually, one of the reasons we are doing this podcast, well, we do this podcast every week because we like talking at you, but we are farewelling Leftos this week. We are sorry to see him go, of course. We kicked off the farewell party with My Friday Five. I'll just pimp myself now. My Friday Five, the five thoughts as Leftos is leaving us, which I know you liked, Leftos, my little kid.
I have to say, that was one of the most touching things I read. You know, I have gotten a lot of appreciation from friends, especially my family, but that was one of the most touching things I ever read. I'm really thankful for that article, Andrew, and most of all, I'm really thankful for all the things that led to that, which I know all of you guys were a big part of. John was the first to suggest me as a team member when he realized my potential when I was still making Miracle my jersey to help him edit, you know, the lighting in the jerseys. And you, Andrew, you know, we've done so much stuff together. You guided me in so much stuff about, you know, how to help run the website, and you stuck with the podcast when nobody else had time to do it. So I'm really thankful for all of you and to the community for, you know, how things turned out. And it was a very touching piece, because even though my story at the NLSC is short, it's like 1 year, 1.5 years long, it has led to such great stuff that I can't ignore how much of a big role the community played, NLSC has played, and how quickly my life changed from being a college engineer to soon to be graduate that made modding tools in his spare time about a game he liked, to being able to actually, you know, develop the game and improve and put my own thoughts and ideas and the community's requests into the game and actually make it better for me and everyone else as, you know, as we move on.
I actually wanted the tagline for our site to be the happiest place on earth, but Disney got involved in that, and so I had to settle for your source for basketball video games. So
No. It's actually, and I heard how you were discussing last week about how someone, you know, gets the attention of the NLSC staff and becomes a member of the team. And I mean, my story proves that. And it goes back to how, you know, how Tim was hired back in, 2003, I think?
2000.
2000?
Yep.
Okay, 2000. And, you know, and how Scott O'Gallagher was picked up by EA last year. It just shows that if you're passionate about something and you put enough time into it and you use the communities to get yourself out there and you have the right attitude about it, you're not egotistic, because I have to say, one of the biggest things I found out from my first weeks at 2K was, and it's in the job description, it's in the job summary, in the job listings that 2K has up, that you have to be a team player. You can't be egotistic. And that should be a lesson to the community. I mean, my story, or to go back to what I was saying, is that my story is not just about how you can get noticed by the team, the NLSC team, but how you can get noticed by the companies that make the games themselves. And I've seen a lot of support, and some people are, you know, some people are sadly jealous, but still wishing them good luck. Others have been less positive about it, you know, behind the scenes, but I don't really care. But, you know, it just shows that if you put your passion into a game and you keep at it and you show that you have the passion and the skill and you have the right attitude about it and you're a team player, you're going to get noticed. And the internet, you know, has helped a lot in that. And, I, you know, there's always the comment that the internet has grown us apart, that we overuse it and we could be texting our friends on Facebook while we're sitting 3 feet away from them, you know. And I kind of, you know, I used to think like that, but you have to consider, you know, some much bigger picture things, like how someone from Greece or some other parts of the world that would have no chance to ever be noticed by anyone. And I'm not just talking about, you know, maybe 2K, maybe EA, maybe other game companies. I'm talking about bright children and teenagers and young adults all over the world that would have no chance of showing the world their talents because they were in maybe an underprivileged area or an area that is going through such turmoil like Greece. You know, they would never have a chance of doing something really great because they wouldn't have the resources and internet and communities like the NLSC has proven that that's possible with, because we have the internet and because we have communities like the NLSC that are so well run to, you know, do my own bit of ass kissing to you guys, that are so well run that can cultivate, you know, from modders to artists to, you know, to developers, to pretty much everyone. I mean, when you think about Ultimate Base Roster and that NLSC was the community that got all these people together and that they're working on it for over a year now, you know, and it all happened here, and it all happened here, and for that stuff to happen here, there needs to be the right attitude. There need to be the right people running the site. There need to be the right rules that are going to, you know, keep the bad people away and keep the good people in. There needs to be the right, you know, modding culture as well for all that to happen. And if it wasn't for that, Ultimate Base Roster wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't, you know, maybe I wouldn't feel like posting my stuff at the NLC, or, you know, I wouldn't feel like getting contributions back from the community and ideas and all that stuff. But I feel like the NLC is one of the best places to be, actually, and not just the happiest place, but one of the best places to be if you're an aspiring modder or an aspiring developer and you love basketball games. And I think, you know, team being hired and me being hired are proof of that. So I see a lot of people that are aspiring modders and that are jealous that they're dreaming of one day being part of 2K. And, you know, the guide was written. The guide was written back in 2000, and it's been rewritten now 13 years later on how you do that. You have to be passionate. You have to be hardworking. And you have to have the right attitude. And if you do all that, you're going to get noticed. I promise you that. So, you know, that's the feel-good story that comes out of this and all the ass-kissing I had to do about it. But, you know, in summary, I just, and the comment I wanted to make is that, you know, all you egotistic modders out there that just keep your work to yourselves and don't want feedback from anyone and don't enjoy and don't appreciate criticism and stuff like that, you're not going to get anywhere. Let me tell you that. Because one of the first things that I experienced when I went to the 2K offices back on July 3rd, it was Wednesday, I was jet lagged, I was tired out of my mind, I spent 12 hours in the office. But the first thing I noticed was how friendly and how helpful everyone was. I've been there 2 weeks, I'm now back in Greece to go through some paperwork, but I've been there 2 weeks I've been watching the development process get done, and nobody was ever annoyed, or you know, nobody ever refused to help me when I had a question about something. Everyone was extremely helpful. Everyone was, you know, if you had a good idea, others would work on it with you. There was no jealousy going on. Oh, that wasn't my idea. I'm not going to help you. You know, it's a great culture. It's a great cooperative culture, and there doesn't seem to be any people that are focused on getting their own, you know, on getting their own first. It's a team effort, and it shows. And that's one of the things I love the most, you know, from my first 2 weeks there. So to make that monologue, to end that monologue that's been going on for half an hour now, just to, you know, because I know you've missed that. I'm just going to say that.
Make it up for lost time.
Yeah, I know. I haven't been here for 3 episodes or so. I have to make up for lost time. So if you feel the tiniest bit of jealousy, don't. Just apply yourself to what you're most passionate about, and I promise you, you're going to get noticed if you go about it the right way. But all you egotistical bastards out there that keep your work to yourselves, you're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to go full open source. I have to say that I was full open source, but you don't have to go full open source just to get noticed. But don't be egotistic. It's in the job description. You have to be a team player, and that's what this community is for. It's not a site that you're just going to advertise your work and say, these things are up for download, I don't care what you have to say. It's a community. It doesn't work like that. We're not download.com where you just put stuff up for download. It's a community that tries to cultivate aspiring young modders. It's a community that you're supposed to, you know, post your work, even if it's on a preview, even if it's just a preview, get the feedback and keep that process going, where the community is going to give you feedback, you're going to, you know, get better through that process, and other people are going to feel encouraged and even get better themselves. So, yeah, the LSC is the place to be. I learned that in the best possible way, and I'm really appreciative of how things have gone so far and, you know, how things ended up. I'm glad the visa is out and that it's official that I'll be able to work in the United States, because I was very anxious about that. Even though, you know, I had gone to the 2K office and Zach Timmerman, who's an amazing person, after just my first day of my, you know, of my being in the office, said that I'm officially a part of the 2K family. I wanted to be excited about that, but it wasn't official yet, and it could be that, you know, I wasn't impressive enough. It could just be that I wasn't impressive enough to get a visa. So I could, you know, I was worried throughout the 8 days it took until I got my, you know, my visa approval. I was worried that I couldn't get really excited. I was getting more and more excited every day. I was having sleepless nights during which I was full of ideas on what I want to do. I was seeing other people work on stuff. I was going through the code base and learning stuff about the game I didn't know before. Stuff I assumed were not there at all, and I was seeing what direction the game was heading into, both the old gen and the next gen version. And I was getting really excited, but at the back of my head, I was thinking, don't get too excited, because maybe, just maybe, this won't work out. But, you know, all's well that ends well. And July 26th, I'm flying back. It's going to be a long day, but I'm flying back to Novato to start officially working at 2K Sports and doing my best in making the future NBA 2Ks the best they can. I hope you're as excited as I am, and thank you again to all of the NLSC community. We're not done yet. There's a lot of stories I want to share, but that ends this monologue for now.
Well,
until 5 minutes time.
Yeah.
I've been relatively silent in my normal, you know, expressiveness, if you will, with your hiring and everything. I mean, I've talked about it. I did my videos on it and stuff. But I haven't gone out and done a Friday Five like Andrew had done. I didn't even say anything on Twitter, I don't think, when you made your announcement on Twitter. I haven't done much of that because, A, you know, I Skype with you. So, you know, I'm talking and showing my appreciation that way. But I have a difficulty saying farewell for anything of it. But at the same time, I don't see this as a farewell because whether you like it or not, you're not done with me.
I'm not done with the NLSC. I may not be able to, you know, participate in the modi threads, but yeah. I just want to make it clear. I'm not going completely away. I'm still going to check all the wishlist threads. I'm going to check all the bug reports, all the criticisms, and I'm going to do my best, you know, amidst prioritizing, you know, for the best of the game, I'm going to do my best to, you know, get as much of the stuff in the game and make the game as realistic as it can be. Because they're not hiring a random guy that's just going to work on whatever is assigned to them. They're hiring someone with an agenda, someone that comes from a community of hardcore fans that push for realism.
So here
and
I go.
That's not going to change.
Convincing you to that, you know, Blacktop Mode is worth everything in the world, but
get enough of your friends playing, and you know, get enough people voting for Blacktop, and you know, it's going to be assigned to me at some point. You know?
Oh, I know that, and
we have a million fans playing Blacktop every day. We have to improve it.
Got to reprioritize. It's NBA yeah. Blacktop 2K16. No.
Yeah.
how big is your family, John? I mean.
I need to have more kids.
Yeah, how many can you pop out in the next few years?
He's just going to buy 100 copies and 100 PS4s and just play Blacktop concurrently on all of them. Just have it be on, and you know, without playing himself, he's just going to be AI versus AI Blacktop all day, just so that the telemetry data shows that 100 consoles are playing just in Vermont,
just in
that particular spot from the same router IP are playing Blacktop.
Knowing me now, I would be trying to record all of those and live stream them to Twitch and my YouTube and trying to incorporate NST if you haven't, you know, incorporated it into Blacktop Mode like you should, and do all of these things all at once. So, but I mean, you made a great, you had a great, you know, monologue there, I'll call it, talking about, you know, being a team player, being hardworking, being passionate. You need to remember that skill is important as well. And I don't, I'm only mentioning it because it felt like to me that you were shortchanging yourself a little bit. There is no doubt you were applying for doctorate programs. You have graduated with your master's. You have essentially picked up C++ programming on the cuff over the past couple of months. And the amount of work and how quickly you can make program changes and add features, and how you dedicate yourself to hours on end on a stupid live stream to create a stupid tool for a stupid game that's not even being stupid supported right now. And it's just the amount of the dedication, the passion, and all that stuff is great. But the talent needs to be there too. And the only reason I'm specifically saying that is, if you go out and make a Kobe Bryant cyberface every year, it could be the greatest Kobe Bryant cyberface ever. You could let every you know, be a team member and let every modder use it in their own mods or modify it and add the goatee or, you know, whatever else there is to do it. There needs to be consistency, there needs to be skill, and there needs to be with the consistency, it needs to be with, you know, throughout. I mean, you didn't just make Miracle My Jersey and call it a day, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're getting knocks on your door. As we know, there are many things in between that has specifically shown your skill to be worth, you know, participating in a $1 million industry. And not $1 million industry, excuse me, a $1 million sold industry. Like, you know, the game sells millions.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that. We've seen so many people, talented people, come through our community and come and go. And it's funny to think back. I was just reminiscing after your coworker, jeez, LD2K, tweeted out asking for 2K13 mixes, and I started watching my old mixes. And I remember Hawks Fan, which I don't know if that's ringing a bell for anybody, and B. Nicholas, and even Shadow, and I, and everyone, who used to dominate the 2K community site with great videos that were always the top videos on the front page of the 2K community site, because we were so good at manipulating the in-game video editor. And we had that consistency and everything, and it got to the point where Hawks Fan was being contacted by 2K and all this stuff. And, you know, those contacts do exist. I'm trying to lead, you know, it's not you just saying, you know, standing above us saying, you can follow me too, children. Just follow the passionate, teamworking way. It's just...
Although you are saying that as well.
Yeah, we but it is possible, and it requires a distinctive skill along with it, which is the only thing I felt that you missed out on it. But I mean, just going right back to it though, you're a friend, and I can't wait to meet you in real life. I can't wait for you to convince the 2K team to bring in a Fly Fat Boy Fly Dunk package. And I cannot wait for you to skyrocket up those ranks so that when we play our NLSC 20-year game and have it be the USA versus the world or however we're structuring it, that not only will we play the game in California, but we will mocap the entire thing and it will live off in infamy in 2K15 or 2K16, whatever the hell it is. It'll be a little Easter egg you throw in there where if you type in the Konami code or something in at the credit screen, it loads up a pre-rendered footage of us schmucks playing a game 5-on-5.
There still needs to be an NLSC roster. We still don't have an NLSC roster, right? A team that has everyone that's on the team with as remotely, similar likenesses as we can have.
Well, someone stopped developing their roster editor before I could do it. Oh, burn! No.
Shots fired.
No, I was going to, but you got to remember, not everyone is as public with who they are as it would be needed for that. So that I mean, we had the NLSC roster, which is our usernames, but I know that there's people on the team that still aren't too happy with having their picture posted, having their full name posted, having their age posted. And I mean, I just took the step to change all of my location things from New England to Vermont, because I've been mentioning it so much on the YouTube and on here I felt the need to make that change. And even then I was kind of going to myself, I'm like, do I really want people to try and find the only Zhao Sming in Vermont? But I'm protected by that because I'm John frickin' Smith. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to have any such luck.
No.
With my name. in any case, before I go on with, more stories from my recent travels, and I have some stories even from before, I never got around to, seeing stories from the interview trip back in April. Andrew, Ben, anything to add on, how we were, all that we've been discussing so far?
Yeah, me and Mario would like to congratulate you and wish you the best on your journey at 2K. No, for those who don't know, Mario is the other EA moderator that I'm in on the EA forums and that Cluminati. I worked hard with the last five. Yeah, Cluminati.
Yeah, known more as Cluminati, yeah.
Yeah. So, me and him, probably talk more than I probably actually talk to him more than any of my real mates at the moment. So, we wish you the best on your journey and all the best at 2K.
And if I at some point I move on and work at Naughty Dog, you want The Last of Us 2, right?
Stick to sports games, buddy. Come on.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
only way you
expand your mind, man. Expand your mind.
It's for NLSC Basketball 2020 or whatever the hell we'll call it. You come back to make our own game. Based around pick-up basketball.
It's going to have jiggle physics like you wouldn't believe.
and not
it's like
and
a lava like, lamp.
And on all the parts that's never jiggy.
Unlock the jousting jiggle mode.
Yeah. It's going to be. It's going to be
like a lava lamp.
That's going to be the pre-order DLC.
Yeah. It's going to be Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball, but so disturbing you wouldn't even know.
What?
We sold one copy, and he looked really creepy too.
Yeah, and it was shadow green. Who 10 years later will still be playing it. In any case.
Oh, God.
In any case, yeah. But I have so many funny stories from my trip, but I don't know if one podcast is going to be enough. So I'm really looking forward to coming back when I have time and on another episode, and hopefully, you know, I'll be if it's after the game is released, we can all share, you know, our experiences and things we want to look forward to for the future games and stuff like that. So I think that would be. What?
You want us to yell at you like that?
I'm expecting that. I was the one doing the yelling up until last year. I mean, you have to, if you go back and listen to the podcasts, the first ones during the TK13 preview season where I couldn't give 2K Sports a break. I was so disappointed.
This is the year of association mode, Leftos. Don't worry.
Yeah. Oh, that. Yeah. What was my reaction when you said something along the lines of, "I know you're pretty disappointed. Association has proven to be the same." I said something first of all, and it got bleeped out. I think back
you
then when
said
we
screw, you said "screw you" and you bleeped it anyway.
Yeah.
Comedic effect. Yeah.
I felt you
flip me off through the internet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Not just once. You were having needle fingers coming your way through whatever way possible, through the tubes, through the black box that is the internet, if you had ever watched the IT Crowd. But in any case, one of the funniest stories about, I don't have a lot to say about, you know, my time at 2K, because most of it is under NDA anyway, and other than the fact that I've met so many passionate people, and I was worried that maybe this would be too much for me, or that maybe I would encounter people that are on the arcade side of things, that maybe it was, you know, our worries after TK13 and my closet and stuff like that, and people complaining about NBA 2K going all arcade and the
I wish
the dunk contest Guitar Hero thing, that, you know, I was pretty vocal about it. I didn't like it, and how people were worried. I was worried that maybe that would be the culture there, but let me tell you, you know what excites me. I'm not going to get into specifics, but you know what I like in the game. You've seen how I play. You know what I enjoy, and let me tell you, I'm very, very, very excited about the direction NBA 2K is going, and the whole, and you know, the mindset of the people working there. And one of the things that many people don't realize about 2K Sports, and 2K Sports is just a publishing company. Visual Concepts is the actual development team. So, one thing that many people don't realize about VC is that there are no pure management people. There's no executive people that sit around all day just crunching numbers and saying that, okay, the game needs to go in that direction. You monkeys, go work on what I said. Everyone, from the vice president of the company to all of us software engineers, works on the actual code of the game every day. When during my first 2 weeks at the company, I saw one of the vice presidents of VC, Jeff, being the offices of producers and engineers, discussing what he was working on the game, on the front end or the back end or whatever, you know, that was huge for me, because I realized that's the way the culture of the company goes. There's no people that just get an executive's job and just, you know, throw orders and sit around all day just managing things, you know, and getting paid shitloads of money just to sit around and tell other people what they should do. Everyone at VC works on the game itself, and everyone at VC are very, very passionate people, very hardworking people. And it's not just the fact that it's crunch time. You know, I'm pretty sure that it's not going to change even after crunch time. And I'm really, really excited to be part of that team. But, you know, that's kind of obvious stuff, and maybe I'm saying stuff that people may think I'm just saying because I'm part of the team now, so why would I badmouth the team? But it goes like, if I didn't have positive stuff to say, I wouldn't say anything at all. I wouldn't come on the podcast just to kiss ass of my, you know, just to kiss the ass of my current employer. Kissing ass isn't going to get me anywhere. I need to work and work hard to prove that I can be part of that team and prove my worth and remain an employee of VC. So if I wasn't excited about where the game was going, I wouldn't go on Twitter to say that. If I hadn't seen so many passionate people, if I hadn't seen the vice presidents of the company actually working on the game itself, I wouldn't be saying that. So really, really, really a lot of passionate people in there from the top to the bottom. I'm really happy and really excited to start working at VC. But to lighten the mood a bit, I have some funny stories that happened during the trip. So, for one thing, do not ever fly US Airways. Or Airlines? Is it US Airways or US Airlines? So,
yeah,
I had to fly US, which is part of Swiss's group. And that's the same on Swiss, actually. Because Swiss is a great company, even though very expensive. And it's part of the group, the same group that Lufthansa is in, which is another great but expensive company. So if you're thinking, I'm just going to a cheaper company that's still part of a great group, you may want to rethink that. So I'm on a transatlantic flight from Zurich to Philadelphia. And the flight attendant is coming through the corridor, closing the overhead what are they called? Overhead cabinets.
Yeah,
the overhead compartments. So she closes one that is next to the single TV that is there to provide in-flight entertainment for an 11-hour flight, and the cable comes off the TV, and because the cables are, you know, hidden inside a cable box, they can't get them fixed. Because if they had, they'd have to bring a mechanic in to unscrew the cable box and, you know, get the cable back on the TV, and that would delay the flight. So it was an 11-hour flight the in-flight entertainment wasn't broken enough in order for the TV to shut down. It was broken enough for the TV to give you epilepsy. Do you know that? You know, you must have seen that when you get a channel, but you don't get it good enough, so the image keeps going up and down.
Oh, vertical hold, yeah. Black,
white, and there's a lot of noise, and whenever there's a lot of white on the image, you get a lot of static through the speakers.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was exactly that for 11 hours. Nice. So I had to actively avert my eyes from the screen, because otherwise I would get headaches. And the good thing about it was nobody was with me on that flight. Nobody was flying from Zurich to Philadelphia on that flight, so I had three seats to myself and got some pretty good sleep on that flight. But yeah, on the next flight I did with US Airways, a screen in the cockpit was broken, and it just so happened that both its backups were broken as well. So US had to order a new screen at that moment and get it delivered to the airplane with the mechanic that could install it. So 2 hours delay because the plane wasn't serviced well enough in order to have its backups working, which is what's supposed to happen when a screen fails, right? You have backups.
At least they check for it.
Yeah. So, yeah, very positive experiences with U.S. Airways. So, and they're becoming a part of American Airlines. I don't know if that's going to make them any better.
So basically, you now get we're all comedians. You talk about
yeah. No, no, no. I remember that when I came back, that was one of the first comments I made in a pre-podcast discussion that I now know where all comedians decide I'm going to be a stand-up comedian when they start. It's on planes. It's on long flights. Because so much stuff happens in long flights, and you see all those different characters around you. All these different, you know, attitudes, and you get all these different weird experiences at airports and on the flights themselves that you can't help but come back with all these funny stories. The weirdest story I heard, it wasn't on a flight I experienced, thankfully. It was that the longest flight there is in the world right now, I think it's from Malaysia or to the west coast of the US or something like that. It's 18 hours long, and because it's that long, the plane that does that flight has a specific compartment in case someone dies. So if someone dies and the plane is over the Pacific, because it's going to be hours until they reach any kind of land that they can land on, in order for the whole plane not to stink up, they have a special compartment to put anyone that died during the flight in.
They've actually got a morgue, an in-flight morgue, basically.
Yeah, with the doctor standby doing CSI analysis. that was freaky to me, and it actually happened. I don't know where I must have heard it on some other podcast that it actually happened to someone. A person died during a Trans-Pacific flight, and they were 3 hours out of Chicago. But they had to land on the Los Angeles International Airport because someone had died while the plane was crossing the Pacific.
Wow,
it's kind of freaky when you consider that these flights are long enough that someone could die and you could be sitting next to a dead person for hours.
Well, they yeah.
What do you do? Do you open the door and throw them out?
Well, you don't leave them in their seat next to people.
No, no, obviously you don't. But, you know, to have a plane that has a compartment specifically designed to host, quote-unquote, dead people.
Well, yeah, but...
It just seems weird to me. It makes sense, but it's weird at the same time.
That's a bad omen, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that freaked me out was that just 3 days after I arrived in San Francisco, it was the Asiana flight crash, which I don't know if you guys heard much about.
Yeah, the San Francisco,
Yeah, and the sheer incompetence of the pilots, as it was proved, because there was nothing wrong with the plane, there was nothing wrong with the orders given from the air traffic control to the pilots. But hearing that, a pilot announced a go-around 1.5 seconds before the plane crashed just goes to show you that the pilots had no idea. How can you have no idea that you're that close to the runway 1.5 seconds before you crash that you announce a go-around? A go-around, for those of you that listen to the podcast and don't know, is the announcement a pilot makes that, okay, this approach has failed, we're going to go to a certain higher altitude and try the approach again, try to land again. And that's called, you know, I guess 500 feet or 1,000 feet from the landing strip. You don't call it 1.5 seconds before you crash. And that, you know, that it pisses me off that such incompetent pilots have these many lives on their hands and are allowed to fly.
Well, not anymore.
That are trans-Pacific. Yeah, not anymore. And Asiana has said that we're going to retrain all our pilots. But, you know, it doesn't help the families of the 3 people that died, you know. And it happened 3 days after I arrived, and I was thinking that thank God 2K had booked me on some pretty good companies. I was flying Air France, which has, I think it's one of the top or has the best security record in the world as far as, you know, flight companies go. So I felt safe, but it just pisses me off to see that such untrained and, you know, irresponsible pilots get to fly Trans-Pacific and have 300 lives in their hands. It was very disappointing. And, okay, I said I was going to lighten the mood, so I'm going to do that.
That'd be nice.
I'm going to do that now, yeah, because I went all grim there for a second. But it's serious. I mean, we can't be all just fun and games on the podcast. It is serious. And, you know, people are doing these flights every day, and flying still remains the safest way to travel. I mean, you hear about whenever a plane goes down, you hear about it. You don't hear about every car crash that happens.
Yeah.
So, you know, people that are freaking out and saying, I'm going to never ride a plane again, your chances of crashing, of dying in an airplane are so much less than going to work with your car every day that it's still ridiculous.
Yeah, well, but now people aren't going to get in their cars and...
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't feel the need to be cavity searched to go on a plane.
No. I agree with you. I had an issue with that back when they've improved the scanners that, you know, that scan your body. I was having trouble when I went to San Francisco 2 years ago in spring during a university field trip. I was having issues because of my lap band, and I was stopped both times at the Zurich airport for a full pat down because my lap band was causing the scanner to fire off, because I guess the piece of it that, you know, is a kind of metallic and allows the, you know, the doctor to inject more fluid into it, it was firing off, and I don't get that anymore. But I have gone through a lot of security. You go through a lot of security to do international flying into the United States, and I remember specifically in Zurich, when I went to the United States for my interview, I was being interviewed for five minutes by a TSA agent in Zurich before I even got into the United States, that was asking me, okay, who packed your bag? Has anyone opened your bag since you packed it? Have you bought anything? Has anyone given you anything since you entered the airport? Do you have anything that could be used as a weapon? What's your itinerary? And, you know, I said my itinerary. No, show it to us. And I had to get out my printed itinerary, which I just so happened to have with me, to, you know, to prove that I wasn't going to do something harmful, which is ridiculous to me.
And this is another topic I'm just chomping at the bit here, just because, you know, being in psychology, I've learned a lot more about what control issues being in a plane with, you know, someone else is piloting it rather than in a car where you're in control at least. And, you know, the labelization of every person as a terrible, bad, negative person rather than just being another good person, and how that affects everything. I'm asking you to please change the subject because I'm not going to be able to contain it anymore.
Okay. Sure. Let's lighten the mood. So I have a very funny story. Okay, so my piece of shit phone, which served me quite well for 2 years.
Ching.
But during the past couple of weeks, it has been extremely annoying. It kept rebooting by itself, and when it finished rebooting and got me back into the Android operating system, it was a random chance on whether I would have all my apps or not. It was a random chance of whether I would still have my data or not. And I'm not blaming Google for that. I'm blaming, you know, it was the cheapest Android phone I could get at the time that had still decent reviews. So I decided I want to replace the phone. So I looked through the internet, and I found out that you can get a Nexus 4 directly from Google for a much better price than you would get it from, for example, in the US from T-Mobile. It's like $60 less. So I said, okay, I'm going to order one. I ordered one, and I put on the address of 2K. The full name, I say Visual Concepts Entertainment, 10 Hamilton Landing, etc., etc. I put the whole address on there because I still received, you know, stuff at the company. I didn't have a place of residence. I was staying at the hotel, but I trusted the company more than I did, you know, the hotel. So I ordered that, and I waited a few days. I was watching the tracking number at the UPS website. My receipt from Google had the full address on it. No problem. It didn't seem to, you know, no problem was reported to me. So it's Monday. It's the Monday that, you know, just passed. That's a couple of days ago. It's 12:20 p.m., and I've just gotten, you know, I'm refreshing the UPS website, and I see that the package was delivered. So I get excited because I have a new shiny toy, and I go downstairs and ask Megan, who is the wonderful administrative assistant we have, and I ask her where's my package? Which, come to think of it,
And this is how he was brought in for HR training.
Yeah, that was the day I had to undergo a long seminar about why you don't ask where your package is. But anyway, No. and she tells me that I didn't get anything. So I'm just saying maybe they report it delivered early. So I go up, I wait half an hour, go back down again, I ask again, and she still tells me that I haven't gotten anything in the mail. Nobody showed up from UPS to deliver something on my name.
She hasn't seen your package.
Don't make it worse. We're past that, please. Okay, she hasn't seen my package. So, in every way possible, and that's good, because if anyone from TK is listening, no. I really appreciate the work Megan's doing, and I haven't harassed her. Nor am I going to. Okay, let's get that out of the way. And
it's just my stupid joke.
Yeah. See, I'm going to get fired.
Thank you.
So I go up and look at the tracking page once again. It says delivered at ports. And I'm thinking, okay, there's no ports. It's a company. It doesn't have a port. So I think that maybe by ports they mean right outside the door or in the parking lot. I go outside. No. I go take a quick look around the parking lot, nothing. And I have kind of given up. So I call UPS and I ask them, okay, I'm saying that the package is delivered, but it's not. It's not actually here. And they tell me, no, it's delivered. And I'm saying, okay, are you sure? What address did you deliver it to? And they tell me 10H Lane. It's incorrect. Because 2K Sports is located at 10 Hamilton Landing. So I'm thinking, what do you mean 10H Lane? What is that? And they tell me it's an address in Novato. And I'm saying, no, that's not the address. The address is the full I repeat the full address. And they tell me, oh, maybe it got cut off when Google gave us the shipping order. I'm saying, maybe it got cut off? Does Google get no confirmation of what the final address is? Do they not realize that when they're typing at some point, the text box can't take any more characters? Is there no system to see if the whole address has gone in? And I'm thinking, okay, it was stupid of me to have to say Visual Concepts Entertainment. Maybe I should have just said 2K Games, because there's no sign that it's the Visual Concepts Entertainment offices anyway, and that address is known for being the address of 2K Games anyway. But why did, you know, why did Google not realize that the full address hadn't gone in? And if it's an automated system, why are they not taking care of, you know, these occurrences. So, and they tell me, you know, we've delivered the packets, there's nothing we can do, you have to call Google. So I call Google. I go through there, I go into customer service, and okay, it's pretty fast. I have to say that, you know, there was no waiting in line at all. I get through to a representative and they tell me, yes, that's unfortunate, that's what's happened, the address got apparently cut off, and we're going to declare that the phone was lost or stolen since you didn't receive it, and whenever if someone tries to turn it on and use it for themselves, we're going to remotely disable it. You're going to be refunded, and you can place a new order, which is nice. I mean, it's as much as they can do after they've screwed up. I don't need to pay for another phone. They didn't tell me, like, oh, it's not our fault, you should have gotten the phone, you're not getting refunded. They told me that they're going to remotely disable the phone, so no guy feels really lucky that they got a 350 brand new phone because it got delivered to them. And I'm going to, you know, get refunded and be able to place a new order. The thing was, I needed the phone because I was going to be flying back to Greece the very next day, and I wanted the phone that worked because my phone didn't work. I had a pay-as-you-go phone from AT&T that didn't roam outside of Canada and Mexico. So if something, you know, happened during the flight, I would have no way to contact my parents. I wouldn't have a cell phone on me. So I really wanted the phone. But I had given up. I thought that I'm going to spend all my afternoon, after I get back from the office, I'm going to spend all my afternoon trying to get my piece of shit phone to the least working Jinx. State I can get it in, and fly with that. So I go back to the hotel, I lie down for a couple of hours, but it's nagging at me. The random coincidence that the address got cut off and AIDS, the letter AIDS, is a street in the very same city I was. That kind of coincidence was, you know, was pissing me off and nagging at me. So I thought, okay, it's 9 p.m. I'm going to annoy some people, obviously, but I want to see. Maybe I'm going to encounter someone nice enough that although they got the phone, they would be willing to give it back to me. So I get in the car, get 10H lane on the GPS, which, by the way, never, if you're going to travel and you're going to put the GPS in your suitcase, make sure to wrap it tightly around clothes. Because if you just put it in any of your suitcases pocket, it's going to get broken. And I found that out the hard way because I get it out of the suitcase here and the screen is broken on a brand new GPS that I have had for just 2 weeks.
That sucks.
And in order to repair it, Garmin pretty much, I paid $145 to get it. Garmin asks for $110 to repair it.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No.
Plus I'm a weight.
Yeah. In any case, I saw tutorials on YouTube on how you can just replace the screen. Buying the screen is going to be just $40. I'm going to do that. And repair it myself, which is pretty easy because you just open it, disconnect the previous screen, which is just a serial port, a serial cable going to your serial port, and put the new screen in. It's pretty easy. So it's ridiculous that they ask $110 to do that. But yeah, to go back to, you know, I put 10H lane on the then working GPS that I had. Go there. Annoy some person because I stopped a street early and knocked on their door and it was an 8 lane. So, but they were kind enough to open the door and tell me that, you know, 8 lane was, you know, the street after that. So I go to the street after that. It's 8 lane and I look around. I know I'm at the start of the street. So at the left, I have a house with a street number of 25. And on the right, I have an abandoned factory, a lot that hasn't been used in years because there's only, you know, dry grass growing up. And the factory has its windows broken and there's no doors. And it's completely abandoned, right? And the street number there is 50. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'm not at the start of the street. Maybe, you know, the numbers go lower. I mean, that would be the assumption you would have made, right? Maybe the numbers go lower if I go down the street. But I go down the street for half a minute, and the number is 225. And I realized that apparently the lots are that big in H Street that they just said, screw it, we're going to number them by adding 25. So it was 25, 50, 75, 100, and so on. So I'm thinking, okay, the only thing that resembles something with a porch is the house at 25. And that's the closest to 10. So I go to that house, knock on that door. Obviously, it was after 9, so they wouldn't even open the door. They were just, you know, the short conversation we had was with the closed door between us. And they tell me that there's no 10 at H Lane, and that the even numbers are across the street. So I'm getting more pissed off, and I'm tired, and it's getting dark. So if the package was around there, I wasn't seeing it. And, you know, the people I talked to could have just as well as much of a reason to just, you know, get the phone for themselves and not give it back to me.
A deactivated phone.
They didn't know that. I mean, I know. You know? So I go back out to the street and go to that abandoned factory, which I'm thinking, there is no ports here. If anything would be the ports, would be maybe the area outside of the gate. So I'm looking outside of the gate of an abandoned factory that had a clear no trespassing sign. So I'm thinking, if I gotten that neighbor that I knocked on his door, you know, even remotely curious as to what I was doing there that late in the night, and he saw me snooping around the abandoned factory, I was going to get the cops called on me. And it wouldn't be that fun to get, you know, questioned the day before my flight back.
Yeah.
But it was $350, and I was determined to do my best to see if I can find the phone. So I go to the outside that abandoned factory, I look around, the phone isn't there. I get the car, I point its front towards the gate, I turn the lights on to light the area inside the gate. I look around and I notice a package inside the gate of the abandoned factory. So I reach with my right hand inside the gate because I didn't want to open it in case, you know, maybe it's an abandoned factory, but maybe it still has an alarm.
Guard dog.
Or, you know, if the sound of the gate opening may alarm some of the neighbors. So I reach with one hand between the gate, between the gate, and try to reach for the package, which was, thankfully, was just within my reach. I'm holding, on my left hand, I'm holding the car keys, and because I'm fighting with my right hand to reach for the package, I don't pay attention to what my left hand was doing, and I pressed the alarm button
on the car keys.
So the alarm on the car starts blaring in the middle of the night, and I'm reaching inside an abandoned factory's gate. And at that moment, I'm thinking, I'm screwed. I need to get out of here. But I press the unlock button on the car keys to stop the alarm. I reach inside once again, throw the package over the gate, grab it, run to the car, and drive the hell away from there. I didn't even bother
getting the hotel.
I didn't even bother getting the hotel's address on the GPS until 10 minutes after I had drove towards I don't know where. I wanted to get out of there. I hadn't even looked at the Pegasus label. So I stop at the side of the road, set the GPS, I look at the package, and thankfully it has my name on it. I hadn't stolen
details.
Another person's package. Yeah, So I go back to the hotel, I catch a breath, and I look at the package. I want to see what the hell happened. So the first label that got on the package was Eleftherios Aslanoglou Visual Concepts Entertainment, 10 Hamlet, Nothing after that. So no 10 Hamilton Landing, no 10... And I understand that there's a lot of Hamilton streets in Nevada. There's Hamilton Landing, there's Hamilton Parkway, there's Hamilton Avenue, I think. So, you know, when you see that, if you're a UPS employee, what do? You ask yourself, okay, it must be one of the Hamilton streets, even though I see just Hamilt, right? I mean, you see all the streets starting with Hamilton, you check, okay, there's three of them. Which one is Visual Concepts Entertainment located in? Right?
Yeah.
Am I too naive in assuming that that's what you would do?
You're assuming that UPS workers would do work.
Yeah. So, above that label, though, there's a second label that says SIP 2, Eleftherios Aslanoglou, 10H Lane, Novato, California, and a different zip code. instead of 94949, it was 94945. So they had just decided to say, screw it with Hamilton, and just replace Hamilt with age, and 94949 with 94945. Which makes me think that they're using an automated system that just doesn't work in the case of conflicts.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't just a system. So, even if some random electronic system decided that, okay, I'm not going to look through the streets that start with Hamilt, I'm just going to assume that it's 10H Lane and on a different zip code than the original, okay? Even if it was a faulty automated system. There's a driver that gets the packages there, right? I mean, there's no robots driving the trucks and dropping the packages. Are they flown in by plane. So, there is a driver that consciously went to H Lane, didn't find the number 10 anywhere, and said, fuck it, I'm going to drop it inside the abandoned factory because it's the smallest even number I can find on this street.
Yeah. I'm not surprised, man. I got a new driver's license mail to the completely wrong address one town over. So, I'm...
If you're the driver, okay, let's say that that Google didn't find out that the address was cut off because they don't check it, and let's say that an automated system decided to say, fuck it with 10 Hamilton, I'm going to try 10H Lane. The driver that drives there, okay, sees no number 10 lot, okay, and just throws the package inside the gate of an abandoned factory and notes delivered at ports. I mean, why not call the company that says and say there's no 10 at H Lane?
I don't get paid for doing that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, apparently, you know, his job is just to deliver it, whatever the cost. Even if it's on a different zip code, even if there's no such number on that street, he decides he's not going to get the packets back and say, you know, incorrect address or non-existent address. He's just going to destroy it in the gate and, you know.
Well, see, I think
that's an obvious place to drop a package, inside the gate of an abandoned factory.
I think that everyone knows that podcasts are becoming more popular these days, and they know that people need stories for podcasts. So it's like, if we all do our jobs properly and have no stories at all, where are the podcasts?
Basically. Yeah, yeah. He was actually working, you know, in his own way or her own way. I don't need to be, you know, sexist about this. In their own way, whoever the driver was, they were doing us good because they gave me that story after. So I go back, I finally have the phone in my hands, and I don't turn it on because I remember that Google is going to disable it the moment it connects to Google servers in any way, or however they do it, I don't know. So I call Google and say, you know what, the person that got the package called me and said and told me they have the phone and that I could go by and pick it up. And the, you know, the person at the other end of the line tells me, oh, you're very lucky because, you know, people would usually try to steal the phone and claim it for their own. And I'm saying, yeah, I'm very lucky. I'm very, very lucky.
Did you mention how they got in contact with you or anything?
No. I'm just saying, I just said, you know, I, 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 they, They figured out that that wasn't their package. They found my, and they called me. That's all I said. So please don't disable the phone. And they tell me, okay, yes, we're really happy that you found the phone. We won't disable it. The disturbing thing about this is they didn't confirm my identity besides the email. When you call Google Customer Service, the only two things they ask you for is the first name, which they don't verify because I had given them three different first names. Only one of them matched the one on my email, on my Google account, and the first name is just, I guess, for the records. It's not used for verifying purposes. They only use the actual the email. So because the email I gave them matched the one that the order was made from, I could claim that the phone was actually found and ask them not to disable it. And I'm thinking, because I'm a pretty open guy, you know, maybe, you know, I would have to imagine my email address isn't hard to find. Okay? Someone sees the name, does a quick search on Google or Facebook, somehow, with a bit of social engineering, finds my email address out, which we know isn't hard, right? What stops them from calling Google and says, okay, I found the phone, don't disable it?
Yeah.
I was expecting them to ask for my password, to ask for my record with their customer service, like say, okay, I see that you have called us before. When was the last time you called us? That would be a pretty easy way to confirm that the person actually calling is the person they tell you they are, right? And I was actually actively trying to provide the person at the other end of the line with information to prove that I was who I was saying I was, because I was wondering whether, you know, saying that the phone was stolen and saying that afterwards that the phone was recovered, maybe that would flag my account as suspicious, you know?
Well,
someone's calling and saying that they found the phone, maybe we should investigate. So I was actively telling the other person, you know, I called this afternoon. The last time I called was at 1 p.m. My name is so-and-so. I could give you my password if you want to verify that I am who I say I am. And he tells me, no, I don't need that. I verified you from your email account. So all you need, if you receive a packet that is sent from Google, and apparently I'm going to be, unfortunately, helping people do some shady stuff. So if you don't receive your package, call Google and say that you haven't received your package and gave them a safe word. Make the customer service representative note down a safe word that unless you say it when you call them to say you've recovered it, they won't believe you. Give them like something like Banana Rabbit. And tell their customer representative that unless I call you, say I've recovered the phone, and say the words Banana Rabbit, don't believe me. Because otherwise, if you can figure out the email address of the person that the package was supposed to be shipped to, you can claim the phone was recovered. So people, if you're listening to this and you're worried about your packages getting stolen, push for Google to improve its verifications.
And this is how Leftos quit his job at 2K to go restructure Google's
security. Yeah.
He's the true inspiration behind the movie.
You do what you're passionate about.
Yeah. If I rant about something for more than 30 minutes, then I go on and work at it.
Let's talk about blacktop mode.
Yeah. No. But it pisses me off. I mean, isn't it fair that, you know, I'd be pissed off that even though I recovered the phone and they didn't disable it after all, that I was able to just prove that I am who I claimed I was just by giving an email address?
They probably heard about what you've gone through with the TSA and thought, you know what, this guy's gone through enough. Just...
No, but I mean, in all seriousness, an email shouldn't be enough, you know.
A few more points of verification, identity-wise, would not go astray.
You know,
yeah.
And I just got to say, you know, hearing your story and everything, you are a braver person than I for actually going up to strangers in California, knocking on doors, saying, have you found my phone? I'm just worried with my East Coast accent, never mind a Greek accent, and the fact that you're here telling us a story now. I am just saying you are a braver person than I, because there is no way in hell that I don't even like the idea of Vermont doing it, because, you know, well, Vermont, I mean, I could walk down to the store right now and buy a gun right now and bring it home with me and carry it with me in my pant buckle concealed down the middle of the street, and I have done nothing illegal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so Vermont's a little different than the California gun laws, but you are a brave man for that.
Yeah,
if you told me that story when you did it, I would have been like, you idiot.
In hindsight, let me admit, it wasn't brave. It was stupid. It was utterly stupid, because I could have gotten in a lot of trouble. It was the last day before I was leaving for Greece.
Yeah.
I could have missed my visa appointment if I was retained in the U.S. even for a couple of days, and all that for a phone.
Remember, you know, they have this stuff called Z-Quil. You are allowed to sleep on the phone. On the plane, I mean.
Yeah, so if you're going to get any lesson from this, you know, two things. The first one is the thing I said, push for Google to increase its verification ways, because otherwise it's going to be pretty fucking easy for someone to claim their packets, your packets for their own. And second of all, don't do what I did.
Don't do.
If you don't want to get in trouble, don't do what I did. Never knock on strangers' doors asking for packets in the middle of the night.
We have gone completely full circle on this. Yeah.
Have you seen my package?
No.
We've gone full circle on this. We've had the entire podcast pretty much doing, do what I've done, kids. If this is what you want to do for your dreams, do as I do. But don't ever listen to me and do as I do.
No. I'm not saying never listen to me. But on that specific case, don't get that excited over a phone in order to go out in the middle of the night, knock on people's doors, and reach inside an abandoned factory to reclaim a package, and then run away before checking what the label on that package was.
With a car alarm. And so 4 months later, UPS delivered my PS4 to the wrong address. I had to go into into Oakland.
Yeah. And someone calls up Sony and says, johnsmith@gmail.com. No, johnsmith@gmail.com. Oh, yes. Yeah. You're verified. Yes. We're not going to disable the PS4.
Yeah, that's,
have fun.
That's why I'm getting it from Walmart.
I don't know. I mean, again, all's well that ends well, and it was a fun story, a fun adventure that I can now, you know, share with you guys, and it's funny to tell, but it gives us some good lessons.
We need you in the future for podcasts, but also to develop this damn game. So be smart.
No. I'm not going to do anything stupid like that next time. I'm just going to claim the phone is stolen, wait to be refunded, and buy a new one. Give a safe word to the customer representative, Banana Rabbit.
You should wear a wristband on your thing that basically states, you know, what would Jiao Xming permit you to do?
Yeah. I should
and think about that. Yep.
Yeah.
And but it Absolutely. Says work on blacktop mode. Get it? The joke.
Enough.
You know, we joke about it and everything, but we've been, you know, recording now off and on for about 3 hours. And I don't know, do you hear this? What do you think I've been doing this entire time?
It doesn't bother me that much right now, because we're only doing a podcast. It bothered me more when you had me actually working and you were playing. When you had me working on a project you were more excited about than I was. It was your idea. I begin working on it, and you load up NBA 2K or Minecraft and start playing.
No, that was done as a joke. That one was a joke. The time I did it seriously was when we were trying to do an online, or when we were, before we did the online association with each other, and we were just trying to find each other, and then I started playing Blacktop Mode, or Community Ballers is what I was playing. That was legitimate. The one where we were on the live stream, and you know, you were programming, and I was jokingly loading up Minecraft. That was to appease someone in the chat. It was funny. It was whatever. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you took offense to that.
No, I didn't. I didn't. Do we believe him, guys?
I love you too much to do that to you.
Did he do it jokingly? I'm going to work together. We're going to work together on the Nedor for Pro Wrestling X. Just allow me to load up NBA 2K and have you working in the background while I just go,
That makes sense. Sure. I'm programming. Yeah. I see what you're doing here. I am learning.
But you have to throw in a comma again once in a while because, you know, you can't understand everything. You're not that experienced in programming, so you have to be realistic.
Hey, you're the one that wanted to turn off the webcams.
My internet connection can't do TeamViewer and the webcam at the same time. It's shitty like that. We've gone all over this. any funny package delivery stories you guys have? Anything, you know, John, you said that your driver's license was delivered at the wrong address. Does that come with a funny story, an adventure, or is it just that?
Well, let's see here. When we get... You know, that's more than I'm willing to share. Yes, we've had many issues with our mail carrier service, delivering very important things, including money and legal documents, to the wrong address. We'll get all the spam in the world perfectly fine. But once we need
spam
something...
You never get the neighbor saying, I got your spam mail again.
You know, the worst...
Spam always reaches its destination.
The worst of it, though, was I was waiting for my... Not the computer I have now. When I was in Massachusetts, I worked down the street from where... I lived down the street from where I worked. And I was waiting for my then-good computer to be able to play 2K9. And... I was waiting for UPS to come. They usually come during my lunch break. And I was very excited. I was walking to and from work. So I was waiting for UPS to come and just waiting patiently, you know, sitting right by the door and everything. It must have happened as I turned around, but UPS came and went. And they were just going to deliver my computer tomorrow, which, as you know, with me, that is just unacceptable.
Unacceptable. Yeah.
I ran after the UPS truck at my work. I caught up. We're talking about like a half mile. So
was Benny Hill playing?
We'll say a kilometer. And I ran about a half kilometer to catch up to the UPS truck, banged on the side of it. He was already in the store, and he's looking at me like, what the hell? This kid's all sweaty. I'm like, you tried delivering my computer, and I wasn't there. So he goes into the truck very nicely, gives me the computer, and now I have this decision to make. I can either continue walking back to work, or I can walk back home. And remember, I'm not driving to work here, so I decided that I don't want to be late for work, so coming back from my lunch break, so I decided to walk the rest of the way to work, lugging a 30-pound computer in my hand. And this is a huge box. And I don't know what was more awkward was... I walk in, and our administrative assistant, she looks at me, and I got this huge box, and she says, John, I don't think you're allowed to replace company computers like that. And remember, I am just sweating balls right now. I'm wearing my, you know, my dress pants, and I have a dress shirt on right now. I had the full sweat stain in the front and the armpits and everything. My boss comes out of his office, looks at me, and goes, I think you need a new hobby. And look at me now.
Yeah, that paid off. The most common pattern I see with delivery companies is that you pay some more to get a package delivered at a certain time. You know, they give you three options: 8 to 11, 11 to 2, and 2 to 5. Right?
Yeah.
So you pay extra to have the packets arrive at 8 to 11. You pay extra to have that option given to you in the first place. So you say 8 to 11 because by 11 I need to be at work or at university or whatever. So you wait. It doesn't get delivered. You go to work or university disappointed. You come back and you get a notice saying the package was here at 11:30, but you weren't here. That's the most common thing that has happened with, you know, with deliveries to, you know. Yeah. You pay extra and it's that half an hour that's just enough to not give you enough time to be there for the package, but it's just enough for them to miss giving you the package completely.
Well,
you know,
I do, but I think that we have some Aussies that are going on 2:20, I believe, in the morning.
Yeah. Very close. Yeah.
It must be. It must be very close.
And
I mean,
we have you, who's getting close to about 7 o'clock at night.
Oh, he's doing time zones now.
And we have me, who it's just past noon, and my fat ass is starving. So.
Yeah, okay. We can wrap up. I've been sharing my stories. I just want to go, you know, Andrew, do you have any short funny story you want to share, you know, on that subject, any funny delivery stories that have happened?
Not delivery. I had a flight one, but not delivery.
Okay, if it's short enough and you can go through it since it's very late there, I mean, feel free.
Do you even want
to go through it?
Yeah, it'll only take a couple of minutes.
Okay.
So it was my first flight overseas, actually, which was thanks to EA Sports, mentioning the competition right there, for their community day. And at the time, I wasn't that great flying, so I was a bit jittery coming off the plane, but I thought, you know what, I've made it. And then, this is 2006, and then the attempted suicide bombing in London happened, where with the, what were they doing, the plastic explosives and the shampoo bottles. So now I'm all on edge again. But then I get over it, because, you know, I've got to fly home. So, on the plane I get, and I'm about an hour out of Honolulu, where we're doing a connecting flight. And I realize that despite the warnings, I've actually got a shampoo bottle in my carry-on.
Oh.
But this is the thing. It's already gone through, in Vancouver, it has already gone through the security. So, I don't know, whether you know, this very forgiving there in Canada or something. So, oh, you can go right through with that, eh? And just wave me on through with this shampoo bottle. And I'm just really starting to panic. I'm about 20 minutes now out of Honolulu. I think I'm going to Guantanamo. They're going to send me to Guantanamo. This is how it ends. And then I'm thinking, do I dispose of it? When I get to there, do I throw it in the bin? No, that's going to look suspicious that I'm throwing the shampoo bottle in the bin.
Suddenly, all the security cameras are turning to point at you.
So I'm just thinking, you know what? If they get it, I'll just apologize and say, look, confiscated it. I don't know how it got through in there. Shampoo, you can test it, go through my bags, you know, just ultimate compliance to show I've got nothing to hide. For about 20 minutes, yeah, I was really sweating. This, what could possibly happen?
Yeah. I got that feeling, but I don't remember what gave it to me, that feeling of extreme panic that something's going to go terribly wrong right now.
Sound of a being told
yes,
off.
Yes. No. It was... I was in California for 2 weeks, as I said, living in Novato, but a friend of mine, a colleague of mine from university, I'm going to be very fast about this, a colleague of mine from university was hired for by a company in San Francisco. So I go to San Francisco to visit him, to spend some time because we hadn't seen each other in 6 months. But what I don't realize is that the tolls at the Golden Gate Bridge during the night are automatic. And I keep getting these signs, these electronic signs, you know, above the highway that say Golden Gate Bridge, no cash. And there was another sign that said last exit before toll, no cash. And I was thinking, fine, I have a credit card. What do I care? And I reach the tolls and I see automatic tolls don't stop. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm screwed. Because either an alarm is going to go off or the rental company is going to be very pissed at me because they're going to get a letter that said that someone went through the tolls illegally and didn't pay anything.
Yeah.
So, but fortunately and unfortunately, fortunately, the company had thought of that, and they had installed, you know, these electronic systems in all of their rental cars. So if you went through the bridge, it would automatically pay for you, and you would get that on your bill.
We've got that in Sydney, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously they were going to apply a big, what's it called? You know, a big additional fee to that because you use their service. So, but yeah, it was those days of panic after crossing the bridge and going through the automatic tolls and not paying. Because no money got through my pocket, you know, out of my pocket. I didn't pay anything. I was thinking, oh, God, I'm screwed. They're going to be, you know, either the police are going to show up and pull me over, or the company is going to be extremely pissed off, and I'm going to get on a blacklist, and it's the only decent rental company in Novato. I'm going to be screwed for a long time. But it all worked out. I just got some pretty bad fees on my, you know, on my rental car bill at the end, because the additional fee if you use their automatic system is pretty hefty. I should have thought of that, but I didn't. But fortunately,
how much was it?
I think it was it doesn't as big as I make it out to be, because in absolute terms it was just, I think, $2.60 or $3.
Okay.
But when you consider that the bridge itself is $6, it's a 50% addition.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. Two good chances that I could be pulled pulled aside by the cops and have trouble leaving the States, but it all worked out. I got the cell phone, I didn't get pulled over at the Golden Gate Bridge, and I'm here now, safe and sound. And Ben has gotten over whatever technical difficulties he had, and he's back on the call so we can all greet off our great listeners.
Sorry about that, my laptop overheated. Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. I guess it was the interesting discussion that got it all.
it just got it all hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To make the discussion even more inappropriate than it's been so far.
Too much talk of packages.
Too much talk of packages in one.
It blew its load.
Yeah, and talking about, you know, senses of panic, I'm going to return to the States with a sense of panic that someone from DK heard the podcast and is actually going to get me through an internal investigation for sexual harassment. So, I hope that doesn't happen, and everything works out just as well as it has so far. In any case, let's wrap up. It's pretty late for you guys, and I'm exhausted as well. John is starving, has a different baby, so
I got steak to eat.
Yeah.
Steak.
Yeah. Last thing, I got a lot of new experiences when I was in the States besides playing NBA 2K14.
How did you not eat peanut butter? I'm not even going to let you say it. How have you never had peanut butter?
And marshmallows.
Marshmallows.
We don't get those things. They're not popular here in Greece. You have to go to specialty shops to buy
that's
peanut
what
butter.
That's what the market's for over there, man.
Specialty markets.
I was just assuming that peanut butter would be a disgusting, fatty thing that got all the people at Florida to be over 300 pounds.
No, that's Greece.
That's the deep fried masas and all that crap.
Okay. I tested it. It tasted like heaven, and I'm going to keep eating peanut butter.
Try Reese's. Find a Reese's
and
eat it. Reese's.
And I had a Philly cheesesteak, which was very nice as well.
They're orange. They're amazing.
What? Yeah.
Reese's.
Yeah. Reese's. Okay, Reese's. Yeah, I know. That was the one I tried.
They're not paying us any money. We can't keep plugging them.
Maybe they will after this podcast. And how extremely popular it's going to be in sexual harassment seminars as to what not to say in podcasts when hired by a major firm.
And this is why you do not Skype with Vermont, because it makes stupid jokes and then it turns into...
I had Ben for that anyway.
Oh. Hey, Left, just remember on the questionnaire, once you take the sexual harassment case, the answers are A, B, D, D, E, and A.
Yeah, okay.
There's always a line, too. It just...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's I think that questionnaire is going to be like the visa application for the United States, where at some point the questions begin about, you know, your past, where, you know, you're just going to check no on everything from that question on if you want to get a visa. If you answer yes to any of those questions, you know you're going to be automatically rejected. So I was wondering, why don't they mix it up a bit? Because people might just skim through and say no, 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 and no is the safe choice in every piece of formal paper that you have to submit to get in the United States. The visa security questions have no as the safe answer. The form you have to fill at customs when you enter the United States, no is the safe answer again. So why don't they mix it up? Like, if you answer no to this, it's apparent that you haven't been reading the questions and that we will consider you a terrorist. So, you know, that would make people...
Like are you not a terrorist kind of thing?
Yeah, something like that. Something very subtle. Are you not a terrorist? You know, just to check if people are paying attention and not seeing the first question, which is, have you been part of the killings of Nazi Germany in the 1940s? No. And I know that every question from now on I should answer no, because nothing good is going to come out of that. But there should be those trick questions. I mean, make people work for it, man. You don't have to just allow pretty much everyone to get into the United States. Right, John?
Correct.
You have to assume everyone's guilty until proven innocent, right?
Exactly. Don't get me started. I need to eat.
And give people full pat-downs and extensive checks and maybe get aliens to probe them.
So basically what we're saying is follow your dreams and answer no to every question.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the lesson from today's podcast, boys and girls. And Andrew, I'm going to let you wrap up for real this time. I'm sorry.
Okay. So I guess that's going to do it for the longest podcast in a while, since we actually had four people to chat away, including...
You were the one that was asking for Leftus to come back for an episode.
I'm not complaining. and of course, we got Leftus back on to tell us a few stories. And first to... you know, as you said, John, it's not goodbye in the strictest sense, but certainly in a sense, goodbye and good luck from the team. And we certainly have loved having you on the team, and you know, doing this podcast has been fun. I think we've done about 30 podcasts together now. It's been very cool and a lot of fun, and obviously done a lot of stuff. Well, I'm repeating things I said in my Friday Five, so everyone go back and read that, because it's such an awesome article, as are all my articles. I'll show the EEO if you want left those. But you know, thank you again for all the stuff you've done for us. It's been great having you part of the team, man.
Yeah, my time at the NLSC has been great. I'm not going to go over that again. I just as a last wish, I hope you guys keep the podcast going strong, because I'm like you during the first six episodes, Andrew. I'm feeling fine sitting at the sidelines and enjoying having something new to listen to that I haven't participated in every week. I know the podcast, if you guys keep doing it and keep doing it as well as you're doing it right now, I know I'm going to look forward to every episode, every Thursday, you know, to just listen to what you guys have to say. And the fun you're having each week shows. And it's tremendous content. I really mean that. Even with me not being around. If you slip in a Leftus joke every now and then in there, I'm going to show you even more appreciation.
Our little shout out. Leftus, and then, of course, when we start bashing on the game, you can enjoy it even more.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Looking forward to the preview season bashing and the after season pre-patch bashing and the after release pre-PC patch bashing. I'm looking forward to all of that.
Well,
I know it's going to come from you with love, right?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Right? And we'll keep it up. We'll keep the podcast up. We'll keep the articles coming. And just in case you're enjoying listening to this podcast, don't get used to hearing Leftus, of course, because he's glowing. But the rest of us will be around. And you can continue to listen to us by subscribing to us on iTunes, or continue to stream it at the NLSCNBA-live.com. Follow us on Twitter at the NLSC. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. Once again, NBA-live.com is the NLSC. That's where all the fun is, the happiest place on earth. Oh, this season system Disney just popped straight into my hand. Sorry, Disney. Your source for basketball video games. So, for episode number 37, I'm Andrew.
Who should go next?
I go next. I am Sun Zhao Ming. I am the leader of...
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I'm Andrew. I was joined by Zhao Ming, the president of Arcade Nation.
Yeah. I'm Leftos, the one that's going away, but not quite.
And I'm Arcane, the master of the Jersey simulation.
See you next week.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.